Okay, so maybe we'll get started. Maybe just a word of introduction as people begin to come in. So first of all, again, tonight's learning should be B'schus Refu Shlema for Hatinok Ben Malkachano, B'soch Shar Chol Yisrael. The baby should continue to have a Refu Shlema. And maybe I just wanted to start with a follow-up. I got an email from Mrs. Rosenberg, actually, and she asked me the following, because last week we were discussing the notion of Kavod and Oneg Shabbos. Kavod, again, a quick Chazara, Kavod Shabbos, doing things in the honor of Shabbos, was everything we do Erev Shabbos, whereas Oneg Shabbos is delighting or taking delight in Shabbos itself, whether that's eating on Shabbos, napping on Shabbos, doing different things on Shabbos itself for our enjoyment. Now, I got an email from Mrs. Rosenberg about Thursday night Shalom. Now, I don't know if you guys are aware of this phenomenon, but in many yeshivas and many shuls, things like that, they have Thursday night learning, Thursday night mishmar, and very often they have Chalon at these events. Now the question is that some sort of pigam in Kavod Shabbos, or maybe even Oneg Shabbos? Meaning if we're supposed to do things that are special for Shabbos, and tonight we're going to learn about dressing for Shabbos and the clothes we wear for Shabbos, among other things tonight, but if something is supposed to be dedicated and set aside special for Shabbos, is it problematic to have those things before Shabbos? Now, presumably, Thursday night doesn't count as an Erev Shabbos meal, right? We mentioned you're not supposed to have a full-fledged meal on Erev Shabbos. Presumably Thursday night doesn't count for that. The question is, you're definitely not tasting the challen on Thursday night just to ensure that the challen tastes good on Shabbos, because, you know, if they're good yeshiva boys, the assumption is that the food's going to be gone by the end of the night. So what's the deal with that? So I don't know if anybody knows, there's a certain Rav in town. His name's Rabbi Yerachmiel Pickholtz. He used to be the Rav in Buffalo Grove. And I think he currently lives in West Rogers Park. He's in the Choshen Mishpah Kolo. He's a massive, massive Talmud Chacham. And he was telling me recently, this is totally unrelated to this class or this year, but he had mentioned to me that he gets very upset at boys having challen on Thursday nights. Challen is something special for Shabbos. Maybe in the next semester, maybe, you know, February time, we'll learn about Bishul on Shabbos. But challen is something very special on Shabbos, not because just, you know, we have it a lot, but it's a special food and it's unique in a sense that we're able to have warm food on Shabbos. Without getting into all the details now, challen is it's very much a Shabbos food. And to have it on Thursday night, Rabbi Pickholtz is very against it. He doesn't like it. And he always tells me, he's like, anytime Ida Crown does a mishmar, make sure they don't have, you know, he always tells me this. Anyway, I can't. Chatayani maskir ayom, we often have challen at Ida Crown mishmars. I find that it's more important to get the guys to learn and have some challen on Thursday night than to not have challen on Thursday night, because the challen is a big draw. That being said, I totally agree with Mrs. Rosenberg in her email, where she was implying that it's really not so pushy to have challen on a Thursday night. If we have options, maybe better to avoid the challen on Thursday night and keep it special for Shabbos. Okay, so that's just by way of introduction, a little bit of review, and connecting back to what we said last week. Tonight we're going to do two, maybe three topics. And then, again, each class, for those who are new, who came, Mrs. Stern and others, each week is more or less a standalone topic or topics. And, you know, come this week, hopefully you'll come again and you'll enjoy in future weeks. But starting next week, God willing, we'll discuss the laws of Hadlakos, Neros, lighting Shabbos candles, and many, many different related topics to Shabbos candles. Tonight we're going to talk about two, again, maybe three things. First of all, we're going to talk about cutting nails as we get ready for Shabbos, and then Shabbos clothing, what to wear on Shabbos, different levels of clothing. And then if we have time at the end, we'll discuss a little bit of Hafrashas Challah. Because last week, we started with the Shulchan Aruch. Again, I hope everyone got the email that has the source sheet. I hope. It's not so long. It's, I guess, two pages or one double-sided piece of paper. But the Shulchan Aruch, in case you don't have it, I'll read slowly and translate. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in Simen Reish Mem Se'if Aleph, Mitzvah Lirchot. There is a mitzvah to shower for Shabbos. Says the Ramah, Kol Gufo. The Ramah says it's a mitzvah to wash your entire body. V'im e'ef sharlo, yirchatz panav yada viraglav b'chamin be'erev Shabbos. And if a person, again, Baruch Hashem, we live in a much more affluent time, but it was, you know, back in the day, it was much more common to only be able to wash your hands, your face, your hands, and your feet with warm water before Shabbos. And he says it's also a mitzvah, lachof harosh legaleya chatzipar naim be'erev Shabbos. It's a mitzvah to brush your hair, maybe comb your beard, something like that, and to cut your fingernails on Erev Shabbos. Now, I always tell my students at a crown, I like to educate them. I don't know if anybody knows. I don't know, I guess, if you had a boy a son or maybe a brother who's in yeshiva, there's something called coasting. I only see three pictures now, but does anybody know what coasting is? Has anybody heard of that phrase? No, okay, so I see three people saying...
I've heard of it.
We've heard of it, okay. So I definitely do not recommend coasting, but I think I tell my boys it's important to know what it is and it's important to not do it. Coasting means you go week to week, you know, coast Friday to Friday, across the whole week, so to speak, without showering, and you shower l'kavod Shabbos. Now, while that might be a great display of kavod Shabbos, it's not the greatest display of kavod abrios, and we encourage people to shower. It's a good thing to shower. That being said, it's definitely a mitzvah, says the Shulchan Aruch, to shower before Shabbos. And Mishnah Berurah in source number 2 tells us, though, when it comes to showering, that he says like this. Again, mitzvah mipnei kavod Shabbos. Again, since it's Erev Shabbos, of course, as we learned last week, it's going to be a mitzvah of kavod Shabbos, a fulfillment of kavod Shabbos. But he says, mikol makom ein zeh chova gemura. It's not like a bona fide chiyuv. It's definitely not an obligation to shower Erev Shabbos. It's a nice thing to do. V'hamekayma mekabo alav schar. Someone who does so, they definitely get schar for kavod Shabbos. V'she'enu mekayma eno ne'enash alav. You're not punished, God forbid, for not showering Erev Shabbos. But again, it's a nice thing to do. Okay, fine. But what's the Mishnah Berurah tell us that perhaps is a little bit more important for us? U'ma'od yesh li'zare. He says we have to be very, very careful. Shelo yavol yedei mitzvas harachita l'chshash chilol Shabbos. We have to be very careful that while we're trying to fulfill this kiyum of kavod Shabbos, to not, God forbid, cause any sort of chilol Shabbos. Now, what does that mean? So he goes on to say, we don't necessarily need to read it inside, but he says people sometimes shower when it's, you know, like, I guess they say in Yiddish maybe, it's mamish almost Shabbos. Right? We should try to shower not 5 minutes before Shabbos, not 10 minutes before Shabbos, but shower that we have enough time that we're not rushing into Shabbos. And he says very often, even if we get out of the hot water before Shabbos ends, whether we're combing our hair, whether we're using the towel, maybe people wring out their towel. He says there are many different issues that can come to Chilul Shabbos. And it's really a good idea to make sure you shower well before Shabbos. What's considered Erev Shabbos for this is an interesting thing. In source number 3, the Mishnah Berurah tells us, when with regards to showering on Erev Shabbos, so he says, what exactly is considered Erev Shabbos? He says, V'hu adin b'chol zeh be'erev Yom Tov. He says, this is true also on an Erev Yom Tov. We should shower. Anything that we're doing, l'kavod Shabbos, can be done on Erev Yom Tov. And he says like this, Aval b'yom chamishi lo heve yikrei d'Shabbos. Meaning, showering Thursday night would not be considered showering l'kavod Shabbos. We should really try to do these things on Friday. He says, Ela imkein e'efshar lo lirchotz b'erev Shabbos. Unless for whatever reason a person isn't going to be able to shower on Erev Shabbos, so then az kol kama demekariv l'Shabbos tfei ma'ali. Anything a person can do close to Shabbos, close to Erev Shabbos, again, even if it's not mamish Erev Shabbos, it's a Thursday or Thursday night, again, that's going to count, again, provided that the person can't do so on Erev Shabbos Friday. Again, Friday's the best. If you can't do Friday, so then you bump it back a little bit. As close to Shabbos as possible, that's what we're going to want to do. Now, when it comes to cutting nails, it's an interesting discussion. We're supposed to cut our nails on Erev Shabbos. That was quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. How do we do that? So if you go back to source number 1, he actually instructs us how to cut our nails. The Rama tells us on the second line, at the end of the second line, Ukishenotel tziporav, loyitel olson kisidron. Has anybody ever heard of this? To not cut your nails in order. Rather, you're supposed to cut your nails out of order. V'yaschil bismol b'kemitza. You start with your left hand with your ring finger. U'biyamin be'etzba. Hold on, I'm gonna read the comments in just one moment. Let's get to a stopping point, and we'll go through the comments. So the Rama tells us you start with your left hand. You would go 2, 4, 1, 3, 5. Again, you don't want to do it in order. You're not supposed to cut two fingers that are not cut your fingers. Cut your fingernails that are next to one another. So again, you go finger number 2, which is your ring finger. Then you go to your pointer finger. Then you go to your pinky, your middle finger, and your thumb. I hope that was clear. Good demonstration, I hope. Okay, fine. Now these are a little bit of these like mystical types of reasons. Anyone call it like heebie-jeebie type of halacha, whatever you want to call it. But the idea is that there's this metaphysical idea that we're not supposed to cut our fingernails in order. And not only that, I think it's the Mishnah Berurah who tells us you're not supposed to cut your toenails and your fingernails on the same day. So you're supposed to cut, I think it's your fingernails, he writes, on Thursday. and then cut your toenails on Friday. I think that's how he says it. It might be the flip side. I'm forgetting right now offhand. He says in source number 4, at the very end of source number 4, V'hanachon sheyikots min haraglayim biyom chamishi, cut your toenails on Thursday, u'mina yadayim biyom shishi. Now cut your fingernails on Friday. Now the question is, why dafka on Friday? So number one, it's a kavod Shabbos thing. You want to cut your fingernails so they look nice for Shabbos. So do it as close to Shabbos as possible. The second reason, and I can't speak to this, but if we pay attention, maybe. But apparently, your fingernails grow back starting 3 days. So the halacha assumes if you cut them, I guess, before Thursday, what's going to happen is they're actually going to be growing on Shabbos. So if you cut them, let's say Thursday night, Friday, it's a way to ensure that they're not going to be growing on Shabbos. And Chazal assume that's a good thing to do. Now,
you know, you're not allowed to cut your... I got coffees today. I'm not on mute, are you?
Okay, so another issue about this, it's something maybe we've heard of before, that there's an idea of discarding toenails and fingernails and the like. So how do we do this? So the Gemara in Moed Katan tells us that you're actually ideally supposed to burn your toenails and your fingernails. Now, I don't know if anybody does this here. Awesome. I just saw that comment come up about the manicures and pedicures. I'm going to get into that in just a second. So I was looking into this idea a lot. Now, the reason you're supposed to burn them and totally get rid of them is apparently there's a sakana. If a pregnant woman, the Gemara says in Moed Katan and Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, if a pregnant woman steps on a toenail, so it can lead to a miscarriage. Now, I don't exactly know how that happens, but I remember when my older sister was pregnant, her mother-in-law wanted her to take her for a pedicure. And she was so nervous, she didn't want to do it. And she says, I remember hearing this once. I don't know where she heard it, maybe in school, maybe a seminary, something like that. But then she said it's her new mother-in-law, and shalom bayis, she doesn't know what to do. So she called Rav Neuberger, Rav Yaakov Neuberger, my Rebbe from New Jersey, my Rebbe in YU. And he told her that it's fine, you can go. I was looking into this a little bit last night. I spoke to Rabbi Mitenki also. And he also kind of poo-pooed it a little bit, says, not such a big deal. A woman would be able to go get a manicure, pedicure. Don't be concerned at all. Now, there are multiple reasons. First of all, some say that if it's not necessarily in the same place where they were cut, I don't fully understand what this means and how it works again on this metaphysical level, but if you cut the nails and then the nail isn't in the same exact place where you dropped it, but it kind of got pushed to the side, it got moved over, so then it doesn't have the same sort of sakana potency, we'll call it, right? So I don't know. You guys can all tell me better. I have no idea how it works in these salons, but I assume that like they're constantly sweeping. I don't know how it works. I feel like I don't know. Can someone like enlighten me maybe? Feel free to jump in. How does it work? Do they like constantly sweep the floors there? No one wants to say?
Yes, they're constantly sweeping.
Oh, there you go. Okay, they constantly sweep. I guess I was going to say it's kind of like a barber where they're kind of constantly sweeping the hair off the floor, things like that. So for that reason, maybe it would be okay. Additionally, when it comes to things that are, quote, dangerous, so there's a Gemara in Chulin that says, Chamira sakanta me isura, which means that, generally speaking, halacha is more concerned or even more concerned with something dangerous than something that's just usur. So what does that mean? Right? So maybe we've heard of different halachos about maybe a cup of water that's been left uncovered overnight. So the Gemara says you're not supposed to drink it out of concern that maybe a venomous snake got into it and released some venom into the water. There's an idea that you're not supposed to have a cut onion. If an onion was cut and left out overnight or in the fridge overnight, you're not supposed to eat it based on a sakana. I don't know what the sakana is, but I remember Rabbi Schwartz, that Sal, told me that we should be machmir for that. There's a big YU psak halacha here. But many of us know also one of these sakanos that the Gemara mentions is having fish and meat on the same plate. Right, if we're familiar with that we've had not supposed to have fish and meat on the same plate because of, again, an assumed sakana. Rav Shechter Shlita has said on numerous occasions, I've heard him say it, that there's no reason to be concerned for that sakana anymore. So why is that? He says it's okay to have fish and meat on the same plate. He says if you look in any medical journal, or if you try to find it in any medical journal, you will never find it that it says that there's any sort of sakana, any sort of danger to have fish and meat on the same plate. The Gemara says you're not allowed to do it. So he says, yeah, but the the rule is that you follow the doctors of your times. He says, he quotes, I think it's a Magen Avram, who quotes a Chassam Sofer, who's really going back to the Rambam, who says you have to go based on the doctors of your times. And no doctor, Bizman Hazeh, would say it's a problem to have fish and meat on the same plate. I remember one time he was saying this over, and I think a boy asked him, so do you have fish and meat on the same plate? He says, no. So someone said, why not? He's like, because I don't serve the fish and I don't serve the meat. He says, but if it was up to me, I would just put out one plate. Fine, but either way, so that's this notion of Chamira Sakanta Meisura, that we're more concerned with dangerous things. So maybe, again, maybe it's on a metaphysical level, whatever reason, Rabbi Matanki, Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger, many others seem to say that you don't have to be so concerned for the stepping on fingernails or anything like that, or getting a manicure or pedicure, things like that. Now, it happens to be, I don't mean to embarrass Dr. Brand, but I was speaking to Rabbi Brand Shlita, also the Rosh Kollel, earlier today. I was talking to him about some of the things we're going to speak about tonight, and he told me growing up, Rabbi Grand grew up davening in a Hasidic shtibul in Baltimore. He told me, because I said, you know, burning the nails, I said, I've never met a single person who burns nails. Rabbi Brand told me that when he was growing up as a kid, they always used to burn the nails. I was like, no way. Now I finally met someone who did it. I felt like that alone was enough to go into the basement magician in the cold today just to learn that. But he said most people really just, you know, flush them down the toilet, put them in the garbage, to be careful to discard them. We don't want to leave them around for sure, sakana or not, but to discard them in an appropriate fashion. So those are just in terms of getting ready for Shabbos, the showering and cutting nails. Now, as we approach Shabbos, so in source number 5, the Shulchan Aruch tells us the following. When it's close to dark, right, close to nightfall, so yishal la'anshe beso b'loshon raka, you should ask people in your house in a tender, a soft voice, isartim eraftim hifrashtim chala. So you should ask people, were you mafrish meiser? Did you take off whatever needed to be taken off of the foods? Eravtem, did you set up an erev? And were you mafrish chala? Vayomer lehem hidliku esener, and to say, make sure you light the Shabbos candles. Fine, let's pause, actually, before we get to this, for a couple questions in the chat. Let's see. Yes, I think if you shower in the morning before going to work, and that's would be considered showering the Kavod Shabbos, especially now when Shabbos is at like, I don't know what it is this week, like 4:20, 4:15, and getting home from work, you'd be a little bit crazy to make sure you shower for Shabbos. I think that would be okay. Yeah. Fine. So again, you have to make sure you're talking B'lashon Raka. Now, why do we speak B'lashon Raka? Again, these are things that we have to do before Shabbos. You know, did you set up an Eruv? Did you light candles? Were you mafrish challah? Things like that. Why is the Shulchan Aruch paskening, right? He's telling us L'halacha that we should speak in a calm fashion. So the Chida, underneath source number 5, says like this. He says, "Bahalos hamincha be'erev Shabbos Kodesh." When it comes to just before nightfall, who is misukan lemachlokes bein ish liishto ubein hamisharsim? There's almost like it's an auspicious time for strife in the house, whether it's between spouses, whether it's between siblings, whether it's parents and children, things like that. V'harbe toreach asitra achra bezel lecharcher riv. And the Satan knows that this is an auspicious time, and it's ripe for machlokas. People are stressed out, people are rushing, and he wants to get people upset, he wants to get people frustrated. V'ha'ish ha'yare yachol fes yitzro. Ha'yare shemayim will be very aware of this and understand that it's a stressful time. And dafka, in stressful times, we have to be sure that we're talking in a calm and peaceful fashion. Now, I wanted to mention this really, because maybe if I can just interject, you know, aside from the Hilchos Shabbos, I think this is actually a very nice idea that relates to this week's Parsha. The Torah tells us in this week's Parsha that Yaakov Avinu says to his wives, "Zayomer lehen roe anochi es pnei avichen. I've seen your father's face. Ki enenu elai kitmo shel shoman. He's not with me anymore. Velokei avi haya imadi." Basically, what's happening is Yaakov Avinu is telling his wives that we have to go back to Eretz Canaan. Now, the reason they have to go back to Eretz Canaan is Kadosh Baruch Hu told Yaakov that you have to go back. But he doesn't start with that. It's not like, hey, Chevra, Hashem told us we got to get packing, so let's go. Instead, he gets into this whole long, lengthy speech, and he's explaining why it's not so good for them to stay by Lavan. And only at the end of this whole long speech does he say, oh, and by the way, God told us to go back to Eretz Yisrael, to go back to Eretz Canaan. Why doesn't he start with that? So the Shlach HaKodesh picks up on this, and he says, when a person requests something from people in one's house, it's not proper to do it in an authoritative fashion, right? You can't express yourself and demand and command people in the house and impose our authority on them. It's best to try to convince them of the merits of the plan, right? Oh, I want to do X, Y, or Z, but not say do X, Y, or Z, but rather X, Y, or Z is a great idea and it's beneficial for everybody because of A, B, and C. When we explain it first and then maybe at the end say this is what I want, so it's much more compelling. And Rav Nissim Karelitz, a great Gaon from Bnei Brak, makes a similar point on this Gemara, meaning the Gemara that the Shulchan Aruch is quoting says that a person should ask his family on Erev Shabbos to make sure that everything in preparation for Shabbos was done. But Rabbah says in the Gemara that you have to do so in a gentle manner. So what's fascinating to note is that from the fact that Rabbah is telling us that you have to do so in a Lashon Raka, in a gentle fashion, so Rav Karelitz points out it must have been that there was reason to do it in an aggressive, angry, intense fashion. For Rabbah to come along and warn us, make sure you do this Lashon Raka, implies that we could have done it in an intense way. And again, I think that highlights this notion that the Yetzer Hara is trying to dafka get us to slip up in a time that's stressful, in a time that we have a lot going on, in a time that we're trying to make sure that there are a million different things, you know, the checklist, the pre-Shabbos checklist is all complete. Dafka, then we need to make sure that we're doubling down and being extra careful to speak in a soft way, in a careful and calm tone. Fine, so that's just a little bit of machshava thrown in. If we take a look in source number 6, moving along from speaking on Erev Shabbos, now we'll talk about getting the house ready for Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, Yisader Shulchano, we should set the table, V'yatzia Hamitos, and make the beds, V'yisakin Kol Anyonei Habayis, and to make sure that everything in the house is ready to go for Shabbos, Kidei Shim Tse'enu Aruch U'Mesuder Bevo Bim Beis HaKnesses, so that everything is ready come Shabbos, once people come home from Shul, and we're ready to start the meal, that the house looks like it's ready for Shabbos. And the Ramah tells us, V'hiye Shulchano Aruch Kol Yom Shabbos. It's very interesting. I don't know how well known this halacha is. Excuse me. But the Ramah tells us that the table should actually be set the entire Shabbos, Kol Yom HaShabbos, V'chein HaMinog V'ein L'Shanos. And this is the Minog, and we shouldn't really do anything differently. We should make sure that the table is set the entire Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah, commenting on that line of Kol Yom HaShabbos, says Ad La'achar Havdalah. The table should be set through Shabbos until after Havdalah. And he tells us a little bit of a move. Gives us a little itza. He says, Yesh Nohagin Liyo Shtei Mapos Al HaShulchan. He says, there are people, excuse me, there are people who have two tablecloths on their table on Shabbos. Right? You have the tablecloth, the upper one, what we eat on. And then once everybody finishes eating, you clean up the tablecloth, you can take it off. And then what happens? Boom, you have another one underneath it. So that what? The moment you take off your tablecloth, you still have that other one on the table, and the table's set, and you don't have to worry about it. So I just thought that's like a cute little itza that the Mishnah Berurah is giving us with regards to setting the table for Shabbos. Okay, fine. Let's just do a quick chazar and make sure there are no questions. Right? We started off talking about showering for Shabbos, cutting our nails for Shabbos. We discuss what's considered Erev Shabbos, which is going to be Friday. If we need to bump it back to Thursday night or Thursday, that's okay too, but we try to make it as close to Shabbos as possible. We spoke about speaking in a gentle, soft fashion on Erev Shabbos to know that this is a time that's stressful, so we have to double down, make sure we're careful to speak positively and softly, and then again, make sure our house is set for Shabbos through the duration of Shabbos. Good. Any questions so far? What do you mean by set? Yeah, I don't think you necessarily need to have like plates on the table and I don't know, flowers or a bowl of clementines or anything like that. I think as long as it looks nice and presentable and that it maybe looks a little bit different for Shabbos, right? If you don't normally have a tablecloth on the table, to have, I think, a tablecloth on the table is something that's there l'kavod Shabbos, and I think that is probably sufficient. Any other questions? Okay. So let's continue. If we turn the page over to source number 8, the Shulchan Aruch shifts gears, and he moves on from the house itself to clothing. Yishtadol shiyu lo bigodim noam l'Shabbos. We should try to make sure that we have nice clothing for Shabbos. Presumably, I think what he means is different clothing, nicer clothing than what we have during the week. V'im ef sharlo, but if a person, Rachman al-Islam, can't afford or doesn't have clothing that's different for Shabbos, lefachot at least yishal shel, which could mean to kind of make it a little bit longer. Skipping the parentheses, begad of lamata, to make sure that our clothing go a little bit longer, Derech kavod. Right? It looks a little bit longer, I guess, when the clothing is longer. I'm not sure what that means. Maybe that in my mind, I'm thinking about like one of those like long kapotas or a frock or a bekesha almost, right? If a guy wears a suit jacket during the week, to have something a little bit longer, maybe it looks a little bit more malchistic, it looks a little bit nicer. I'm not sure, but it's clear from the Shulchan Aruch that we have to sort of level up when it comes to clothing on Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah tells us in source number 9, Yishtadel. What does it mean a person should try to have nice clothing? Well, he first explains where it comes from. Dichsev v'chi barato, and his honor, right? And the Gemara learns from there that clothing can be very much the honor of a person. It's there, lekavod ulisifares, as we know from the Kohen Gadol, the big day kahuna, where lekavod ulisifares, it gives him honor, it gives him grandeur. V'darshu chazal, and chazal learned from here, shelo yehei mabushecha shel Shabbos kimabushecha shel chol. Our clothing on Shabbos should and ought to be different than it is during the week. V'tov shelo yilbash b'Shabbos mikol ma shelavash b'chol afilu chalak. So says the Mishnah Berurah that it's almost as if, it sounds like v'tov, it's good, if our Shabbos clothing is entirely different than it is during the week. I think the Gra is quoted as having everything different. On Shabbos, from top to bottom, shoes to I don't know if you wore a hat, but let's say shoes to hat, from top to bottom, mamish, everything was different. I have a cousin, my mom's cousin, I think his name's, we call him cousin Sefi, I think. He wears, my sister will correct me if she's still on the call. Yeah, she's still here. He wears mamish like a white hat, a white suit, a white shirt, a white tie, white shoes. Everything on Shabbos is completely different. I've seen other Sfardim do this as well. But the Gra, again, top to bottom, everything was different on Shabbos. And maybe that's what the Mishnah Berurah is getting at here. Says the Mishnah Berurah, though, v'im efshar lo, again, towards the end in source number 9, if it's possible for a person, tov shielo gam talis acher l'Shabbos. And for a man, if he's wearing a talis, it's nice to have a special talis for Shabbos. So the question is, though, how should we dress on Shabbos? And what's considered changing our clothing for Shabbos? So very interestingly, in source number 11, Rav Nissim Karelitz, who was a Gon who passed away, I think, 2 years ago from Bnei Brak. Rav Nissim Karelitz, he was the nephew of the Chazon Ish. He was one of the leading poskim in Bnei Brak, and he served on the Bezdin of Bnei Brak, a really world-class Talmid Chacham. So he breaks it down into three categories. In the first paragraph, he says, Nira shegeder habegadim shetzarech shiyu miyuchadim rak l'Shabbos. What's the level, what's the category, I should say, of clothing that requires having specific or special clothes for Shabbos? Again, in brackets, im yeshlo. Again, if a person can afford. Where it's underlined, hin habegadim sha'adam mischabed umisyakir behem. It's dafka through clothing in which a person, you know, gets a sense of honor from wearing. So whether it's a new dress, or maybe for a man, a new suit or something like that. Maybe a new tie. Maybe it's a new necklace. Something like that. Or a different necklace. That would be considered something that we should have special for Shabbos. Set aside special for Shabbos. That's the notion of v'chi barato, that our clothing gives us honor. In the second paragraph, though, this is like a level lower. Aval habegadim she'in derech sheha'adam mischabed umisyakir behem. But there's certain clothing that we don't necessarily get honor from. It's not honorable. Right, where it's underlined in the middle of that paragraph, kigon habegadim hasmuchim lagufo. So we'll call them undergarments, maybe an undershirt, maybe a kikiriki or something like that, whatever it may be. The point is that you don't need to have special ones set aside for Shabbos because we don't get an honor from wearing those clothes. They're just there. We need to wear them. So that can be the same as it is during the week. They don't need to be special. They just need to be cleaned. Amnon, he says at the bottom, the third category, begadim shelo noadu ela lahatzu min hakor. Something that's just there to protect you from the weather, from the inclement weather, from the rain, kigon big de choref, like winter clothing, right? You have your winter hat, you have your winter coat, you have your scarf. There's no requirement, says Rav Karelitz, to have something special for Shabbos. Kevin she'in derech sha'adam liskabed behem. When you wear a big winter coat, you're wearing your coat to be warm. Now, are there fancy winter coats out there? For sure. But the point is that ultimately, we're, especially here in Chicago, it's all about function, right? It doesn't matter how spitzy it is. If it keeps you warm, that's what matters. And that's what Rav Nissim Karelitz is telling us. That's what the Sefer Chud Shani is telling us. V'gam in regilos l'chabsam. Also, we don't really wash these things, right? We're not washing our winter coats as regularly as we wash our undershirts or our shirts or anything like that. In tzarech l'hachlifam lebig day Shabbos. There's no reason, it's unnecessary, to have special coats set aside for Shabbos, special scarves or special winter hats. set aside for Shabbos. Now again, parenthetically, I would mention that if one does, that's a beautiful thing. If a person wants a dafka, have a Shabbos coat or a Shabbos scarf or something like that, they can afford it if that's great. If they can, then beautiful. I would say that's a very, very nice thing to do to honor Shabbos. But I would say again that it's not necessary. Now, if you jump to the last paragraph where he talks about clothing, he says na'alayim nir de'inu b'chal ksus nikia. Right, when it comes to clothing, you don't need to have special shoes dedicated for Shabbos because it's the derech shehim mislach lechem miyad kishehochem behem. Very often, our shoes get dirty right away when we wear them, and because of that, he says lo shayach behem kokach nikios. They're not something that we look at. Oh, these are clean. These are not so clean. They're just shoes. Shoes get dirty. That's how it goes. And therefore, lo matzinu sheish la'achlifam lichvod Shabbos. I don't find that people change their shoes for Shabbos. Now again, that being said, there are definitely people who have Shabbos shoes. And that's again a beautiful thing. I would also say, depending on the community and where you're holding and where your friends are holding, things like that, it could be there are definitely shoes that are, you know, that would even fit. I remember when I was learning this with Rabbi Kraft, we were discussing this, that I would say almost every single day I wear a tie. For sure to school I wear a tie every day. And almost every day I wear a suit as well. Now I also wear a tie on Shabbos and I also wear a suit on Shabbos. So maybe I try to, you know, have death set aside ties for Shabbos or suits for Shabbos. But Rabbi Kraft and I were discussing how there are definitely people who have special shoes that are almost like a status symbol, right? Or maybe there's a belt with a certain belt buckle that's almost like telling people, you know, how much my belt cost. And it could be that for that, it might actually fit into the first category of the chutshani. Him ha-begodim sha'adam mischabid u-misyakir behem. Right? It's people, you know, get honor u-misyakir behem. And people will spend money on these things. So I don't think it's totally incorrect to say that there's certain shoes or belts or ties or things like that that would automatically go into the first category just based on how much they cost and the status symbol, so to speak, what they represent. But again, these are the three categories. Again, let's quickly review them. We have the things that give us honor and something that looks really nice. So that would be, again, like a suit or a dress or maybe a necklace or a tie or something like that. We have the next level down, which is maybe undergarments. Undershirts, kikirikis, the like, socks, things like that don't need to be separate for Shabbos. They should just be clean. And then we have the things that protect us from the cold, like winter coats, raincoats, or a scarf or hat. All those things, that's totally, totally fine. You don't need to have special ones for Shabbos. Fine. Let's just take a look at source number 12. The last thing I wanted to see. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in Siman Reish Samach Beis that now when Shabbos starts, so Yilbash Begadav, we should wear our clothing Hanoim, the nicer clothing, Yismach and Bibisimcha, Bibias Shabbos Kiyotze Likras HaMelech. Right? There should be an atmosphere of Simcha. There should be an excitement in the air that Shabbos is coming. We're going to greet the king. Ukeyotze Likras Chasan Vekala, as if we're going to greet a Chasan Vekala. There will be Chanina Ma'atef Vekoi Bipnaya, Demale Shabbos of Amr Boi Venetze Likras Shabbos Malkasa. This is maybe one of the sources for singing Lichadodi, or one of the ideas where Lichadodi comes from, to go and greet the Shabbos Malkasa, to be excited for Shabbos. Now, if you look at the Ramah, where it's on, I think this is underlined in everybody's, right? Maybe the very last source. Yalbish Atzmo Big De Shabbos Miyad Acher Shirachatz Atzmo. Says the Ramah, when should you get dressed for Shabbos? Right? When we're talking about putting on our Shabbos clothing, so when should a person get dressed? He says, right after you shower, assuming you're showering closer to Shabbos, you should get dressed in your Big Day Shabbos right away. Vizehu Kavod Shabbos, because that expresses Kavod Shabbos. You shower for Shabbos. You get dressed for Shabbos. You're running into Shabbos, you're getting excited to go greet the Shabbos Malka. So I think that's another thing to do. I want to point out two other things about clothing before we conclude this part. First of all, the stipler, it's quoted in the Sefer Orchos Rabbeinu, this is actually very interesting, would take off his clothing the second after Havdalah. He would change into Big Day Chol the moment Shabbos ends. Right? He didn't want to be wearing his Big Day Shabbos at all during the week, so the moment they made Havdalah, he would change into Big Day Chol. I thought that was an interesting thing. Some people like to run and shower right after Shabbos, and maybe this is a nice source, again, to show Dafka, you're wearing clothing on Shabbos for Shabbos. Shabbos is over, so now I can change. Additionally, I think I may have skipped this one. Hold on. Oh, if you go back to source number 10. Okay, this is important halacha that we skipped. In source number 10, the Mishnah Berurah tells us that when / where do we have to be wearing Big Day Shabbos? So he tells us, again, they should be na'im kefi chalasa. So they should be nice according to whatever one's means are. Va'afilu imhu b'derech levado. Even if a person is traveling on their own, u'be'beis ein Yehudi, or they're in a non-Jew's house, let's say. Gam kein yilbosh Big Day Shabbos. If a person's in quarantine, a person's by themselves, a person's in a hotel, a person's on vacation, it doesn't matter. Says the Mishnah Berurah, we should always be wearing Big Day Shabbos on Shabbos. Ki ein hamalbushim lechvod haroim, ki im lekavod haShabbos. Says the Mishnah Berurah, it's a little musri, but I think it's a very beautiful line. He says, the malbush, the clothing that we wear on Shabbos, is not for the kavod of other people who see us, but rather, ki im lekavod haShabbos. It's for Kvod Shabbos, and that's why we wear clothing. There's a story they say about Rav Soloveitchik. In the summers, he used to be in Boston, and many Talmidim from YU would go up to Boston for Shabbosos to be by the Rav for Shabbos. And apparently there was a boy who lived in Boston. I'm not familiar with the areas there, but he lived in one of the communities in Boston. And he walked for the Shabbos afternoon shir to be with all his friends from YU and to be by, of course, Rav Soloveitchik. But it was a blisteringly hot summer day, and apparently, I don't know how the story goes different in YU folklore. Maybe it's different. But some versions are he went without a jacket. Some versions are he went without his tie. And not just without a jacket, but without the jacket and tie. And he got there. And apparently Rav Soloveitchik said it would have been better for you to stay at home and continue wearing Big Day Shabbos and to come to Shir and not be wearing Big Day Shabbos anymore. Many of us hear that story. Rav Yitzhak Kohn, one of the other Rebbeim in YU, always says that he always gave muster to the boys in YU that you wear a tie on Shabbos for Friday night davening and for Shachris on Shabbos. Why are you not wearing a tie for Mincha towards the end of Shabbos? He always said, Shabbos is Shabbos. It doesn't matter if it's an hour left of Shabbos or 5 hours left of Shabbos. We should always be dressing, in accordance with Shabbos. Let's see how we're doing on time, 8:38. Maybe I'll just quickly, if that's okay with everybody, just run through a little bit of halachos that pertain to Hafrashas Challah. Right, last week we spoke about one of the things that we do on Erev Shabbos is to get chalos that are baked special for Shabbos. Now, many of us bake our own challah. We bake our own challah. And then that comes into the question of being mafrish challah. So just real quickly, in Chutz La'aretz, the mitzvah to be mafrish challah is a din d'rabbanan. In Eretz Yisrael, if the majority of the Jewish people are there, so then it becomes a din, a mitzvah d'araisa. But in Chutz La'aretz, no matter how many Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, it's always going to be a din d'rabbanan. Now, when it comes to hafrashas challah, so there are two parts to the mitzvah. There's the hafrasha, there's the separating the little bit of dough, and there's also the nesina l'kohen. You know, if we, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, if we had kohanim, if we knew who all the kohanim were, so we would actually take some of the challah and we would give it to a kohen. We don't have that as much anymore, and it could be that the Iker mitzvah, this is machlokis in the Rishonim, we're not going to get into all this now, but is it really one mitzvah or is it viewed as two mitzvahs? Is it fundamentally hafrasha and you give it to a kohen, right? But that's kind of like an afterthought, it's a secondary component of the mitzvah, or is it no, there's a hafrasha and there's an asina. But the hafrasha for us, no matter what, is going to be the Iker part of it, that's going to be the primary part of the mitzvah. The question is, one question I should say at least, is let's say a person forgot to be mafrish challah, and Shabbos starts. So in Chutz La'aretz, there is a move that we can do, which is called Ochel V'Achar Kach Mafresh. You can actually leave a little bit of your challah over, right, or your challah roll, or your lofa, your challah. Right, it gets trickier talking about being Mafresh challah, which is really just a little bit of the dough versus your actual challah. But anyway, the point is, you on Shabbos, you realize you forgot to be Mafresh challah. So you slice up the challah, and you leave a little bit to the side. Everybody eats, and you remember to say that this little piece is going to be separate for the Hafrasha. Now, that can only happen in Chutz La'aretz. It can't happen in Eretz Yisrael. Just in terms of time, we won't get into that right now, so we'll move along a little bit. When it comes to what requires Hafrashas Challah, so it's interesting. There's actually three categories of foods. There are foods that are kneaded and baked, because again, it needs to come from dough. The Pasuk says, Reishis Ariso Seichem. Pasuk in Parsha Shlach says, it should come from the first of your dough. So it needs to be a dough. So something that's kneaded and then baked requires challah. If something is kneaded and then not baked, anybody have an example of something that would be kneaded and then not baked? Feel free to jump in. Sufganiyot. Oh, very good. Okay, good. So this is a Inyani Diyoma, right? So sufganiyot, or noodles also as well. So those are kneaded, but they're not baked. And there's a question whether or not they require hafrashas challah. That's a big, big machlokas in a tosos. Rabbeinu Tam tells us that actually you have to be mafrash challah on those doughs that are not going to be baked. Since they're kneaded, they have the status of dough. Whereas the Rash, Rabbeinu Shimshon, says no, they do not require hafrasha. And then the next category are things that are not kneaded, but they are baked. So that's probably going to be like any sort of runny batter for like a cake or pancakes or anything like that. And that's another discussion. So again, those are just different categories of foods. We're not going to get so into the details here, but what I wanted to point out also, again, there are two exceptions to the rule of things that would require hafrasha, where obviously this is not a thorough shir on hafrasha, and maybe one time we'll take some more time to go through it in a more thorough fashion. Actually, after Mrs. Eisenberg's comment, maybe Dafka, we should have a special shir on Chanukah about hafrasha's challah and whether or not it plays a practical part by donuts and things like that. But first of all, it only applies to Jewish-owned doughs or breads, right? So a bakery that's not Jewish, when I, even if it's kosher, it doesn't require hafrashas challah. So Dunkin' Donuts or Entenmann's or things like that, there's no chiv of hafrasha. And furthermore, and this is like the big question that people deal with, is that it needs to be from your dough. The question is, what's considered dough? And the discussion is, how big does your bowl or bash or bread maker of dough, I don't know what people use here, but whatever, you know, however you have your dough, how big does your dough need to be? There's a big machlokas in the poskim, whether it needs to be, there's a whole big equation and, what's it called? How much it needs to be, but really, we'll say like this. Some people say it's 3.67 pounds of flour, whereas others say it's about 5 pounds of flour. I think most people, correct me if I'm wrong, here in America, go by 5 pounds. Does anybody do, anybody who's Ashkenaz, do less than 5 pounds and they make the bracha on hafrashas challah? No, everybody does 5 pounds, they make the bracha. I saw poskim in Yerushalayim say 3.67 pounds would still be required to make a bracha, but I think most people do 5. It could also be it's convenient because a bag of flour is going to be 5 pounds, and you know once you use the whole entire bag, so then you have to be mafresh. If you don't use the entire bag, it gets hard to kind of cheshbin. Is it 3.67 pounds of flour? It can be a little bit difficult. So many people assume 5. That's a big discussion. I would ask your LOR what's the right thing to do there. But again, maybe another time we can discuss hafrashas challah in a more thorough fashion, but I just wanted to be finished by 8:45. So thank you everyone so much for coming. Amir Tzashem, next week we're going to discuss, we're going to really begin learning Hadlakos Neros. So tell your friends that if they missed out because we were learning Hadlakos Neros, now we're starting. So they should all feel welcome to join us. Okay, thank you everyone so much for joining and learning with me, and I'll see you guys next week.
Thank you. Thank you.